This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to
take a stand. Take a stand. See Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is brought to you by Burger King, the Cleveland Clinic, Grand Bahama News, the National Insurance Board, Printmasters, RF Banking Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well today. If you want to give us a call on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. Or 325-4316 or 325-4259. If you're in the Family Islands, you can call us on 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So let me give you the lay of the land today. In the first half of the show, open line. Ask your questions, make your statements. However the Lord leads you, be respectful, be decent. If not, don't call. You know, don't text. But then in the second half of the show, we are continuing with our discussions with regulators about what it is that they do. And guess what we have? Next month is hurricane season begins. And so, you know, lots of people will have discussions about insurance. Of course, all through the year, people are insuring their vehicles and insuring other things, have life insurance, et cetera. They are all regulated by someone, and we are going to be speaking with the Insurance Commission in the second half today. So I'm looking forward to that. But in the first half, as I indicated, if you have any questions or comments you'd like to make about anything the Lord lays on your heart, please feel free to do so. Okay, that's the open invitation to you. And once again, you can call us on 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259 from the Family Islands. You can call us on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Whatever question or comment you have. I have to say that I am rather intrigued by the amount of attention that the FNM's convention is getting in regard to the run for party offices, particularly the leadership of the party and of the chairmanship of the party. I mean, there's lots of discussions. Even as I move about, people are asking, oh, what you think will happen? Why this? Why that and the next thing? So there's a lot of interest. And that says to me that people think the outcome matters and that people are motivated regarding what it would mean to the next election and so forth. So it is an intriguing situation. This text, can you speak to how a Minnis, Cartwright, and Sands team will look leading the FNM into the 2026 general election, please? Minnis Cartwright and Sands team, how it will look? interesting, I would say. Be very interesting. The dynamics between Dr. Minnis and Dr. Sands has never been a good one. It's not been one that works solidly there. I don't know if there's professional rivalry, if there is some just personality differences and the like, but it seems to me over the years that those two have not been able to gel very well. So it would make for an interesting times to see that team together. If that happens, I believe that Dr. Sands, who I've seen has been more than a professional in terms of his being able to subdue any personal feelings or interest in the interest of the team, would rise to the occasion and do what he had to do. Shannon Cartwright, I think in the same way, I don't think he would ruffle any feathers if that were the outcome. And so I think it would all depend on how Dr. Minnis interacted with all the other members of the team. And quite frankly, my own experience is that Dr. Minnis is the kind of person who, if he perceives you are not on his team, he does not work with you very well. He does not take kindly to you. You know, if he can't negotiate some settlement of compliance or obeisance or something to his brand and way and so forth, then you either get cut off or you will be ignored or you won't flourish. That's been my observation of things. And so he could have changed. He could have changed by now in terms of my observation. And so maybe he does the necessary to make that team work. So we are none of us what we were in the past, unless we choose to be. We are all of us able to change if we choose to be, if we choose to do so. So any observation of a person in time is only an observation of them in that time. What they display now really is up to them. And so I'm not one of those people who believe a person is always what they have been. I don't believe that. I believe people can change. But you got to show me that first. You ain't, I got to, that has to reflect some demonstration. Say, tell that texter, wake up, that's a dream. No Minnis. Mr. Lang, who Brian think he is about if Minnis win, he is an FNM. If he don't, he is not. Well, I mean, I think if that's the statement Brian makes, I didn't hear him make the statement, but if that's a statement Brian makes, he's told you exactly who he is. So you don't have to worry. You already know he's not an FNM. He's a Minnisite. It's reality. I had a gentleman who was very forthright with me. He said to me, he said, Shavaro, I was a Pinlandite. I was a Pinland man. And when Pinland was no longer the leader of the PLD, I embraced Ingram. And so he was honest with that. If a person tells you, if this man wins, I am that. If that man doesn't win, I am that. He is not the thing that the man is running for. He's the man's thing. That's all that is. And so you already know. So when if Minnis doesn't win, then all of the persons who win, including Mr. Pintard, should know. Brian McCartney is not your man. It's not an FNM, not the person you should trust. He is someone who wanted Dr. Minnis, and he was loyal to Dr. Minnis. There you go. And that's personality culture. That's personality politics. That is not the politics of institutions or parties. You are interested in an ambition that is interested in your ambition, not in the institution itself. So and he's being honest. So you should applaud him for that. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
yes, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. You said it's open line and you could ask questions today.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have two questions I'd like to ask, Mr. Lang, please, if it's possible. My first question, Mr. Lang, is why was it necessary, or what was the reason to begin giving MPs the constituency allowances? Why was that found to be necessary? Like, what was the reason? Like, what was the solution to be sought by that? One. And two, if individuals who are in government or were in government are found to be like for example the BPL deal that's going down now, if individuals involved in government, especially those who may be even be involved in the process of having it being broken up into this type of thing where people are generating power. If individuals who were in government can be found to be like a part of those companies in any way or to benefit from the whole process, can that be a conflict of interest? And like, can it be something that can be punishable by some prosecution? Because I feel as if that is just undeserving. So those are my two questions, please, sir. Why was it necessary?
I got the two questions. No problems. I'm clear. Yeah, no problem. The first one I can answer because when it first happened, I was there. When I was in the Ingram administration, when the cabinet decided to provide for $50,000 allowances for constituencies, and I was the Minister of State responsible for administering those funds. The reason was very simple. Public Works as a ministry decides what would be the capital works they would carry out anywhere. They don't do that with regard to to constituencies. They do that with regard to national priorities, with regard to national planning and all that kind of stuff. The Ingram administration determined it would be good if members of parliament could have some say over some projects specific to their constituencies, because they were continuously complaining that this needed to be done, that park needed to be done. They could only appeal to the minister or to the ministry with respect to that. And so the determination was, let's make an allocation of $50,000, not to be given to members of parliament, but to be available to members of parliament to direct which projects could be done in their area. You wanted a park done, you got some pricings for the park. The park would be like $20,000. You submit the invoices from the contractors or from the vendors to the Ministry of Finance. Shivago, Lang, and the Ministry of Finance reviewed those and made approvals by the Treasury for payments to be made to said contractor, individuals, entities, so forth, inspected that. So the entire idea was give members of parliament some ability to direct funds for the development of projects in their constituency. That was the be all, end all of it all determination. So that I think worked out well for members of parliament. As to a former we cannot have our cakes and eat it too. You can't cuss a man when he's in office for being in office. And then when he's no longer in office, you still won't cuss a man because you treat him like he's still in office. He's not in office. He's no longer a member of parliament. Even members of parliament, not cabinet ministers, even members of parliament can have an interest in government projects, you know. I don't know if you all know that. By law, they can't. What they have to do is disclose that interest, though, in parliament, so that the parliament can take a vote on whether or not there exists a conflict of interest that could be an impediment to the advancement of the public interest. So if a parliamentarian could have an interest in a government project and disclose it still and may in fact have it approved, because he might be or she might be the only person or the best person to do it, why would it not be the same thing for someone who is out of parliament? There are no laws prohibiting somebody who is not now in parliament from having an interest in a public project? Nothing. Where does the conflict of interest exist? It can't be for the former member of parliament. He or she is not a member of parliament anymore, a parliamentarian. It has to exist only for people in parliament. Because so that you are aware, conflict of interest relates to putting the primary interest, which is doing the things that are best for the public, above, or putting that below a secondary interest, which might be your personal financial gain, your personal power, your personal promotion, or that kind of thing. That's what a conflict of interest is. When the two of those, when the primary interest, which is the public's interest, has the potential to be put below your secondary interest, which is yours or some family members or something. The existence of a public of interest is not a violation. It is merely when that interest truly subdues the public interest below that of a secondary, tertiary interest. That's when the infringement actually occurs. That's why when the existence of a potential conflict of interest exists, a disclosure is one of the best means to bring it forward and resolve it. But there's no law saying a former member of parliament, a former senator, a former cabinet minister cannot participate in some government project. And if there is a conflict of interest, it more relates to someone sitting in government who might wish to do something for these people above the public interest rather than it being for them themselves. Okay, we have another caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Okay, not sure what's going on there. This text says, good afternoon, sir. I often hear people saying the reason why the FNM lose the last election is because a lot of their supporters didn't vote, and a number of reasons was given for this one being because of Dr. Minnis. Should the same be applied to me, to Mr. Pintard, after losing the by-election in Weston and Bimini? Let's take into consideration, Mr. Pintard, the supporters' support of all the present and past leaders of the FNM. Well, to me, that's like apples and oranges stuff. I mean, Dr. Minnis led the party into a general election, Mr. Pintard into a by-election. You can blame Mr. Pintard for the loss of the by-election, that's for sure. But what happened in a constituency that was dominated by the PLP, that was won by the PLP, and that was became available, the seat became available because of the death of a popular PLP, you have to put into context losing that. Because frankly, I didn't think that Mr. Pintard should have gone after it to begin with. That many people would tell you, I said that all along, but they did, they chose that. But just because that seat was not won doesn't mean that the other places across the country could not and would not have supported and will not support. So I think you're mixing up apples and oranges. It's not the same thing at all. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Mr. Lyon, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay, yes, sir. I hope you're doing well. Mr. Lyon, you know, yeah. Two things. That constituency allowances, I mean, that has been bastardized to the nth degree because that ain't working like how it's supposed to work, right? I didn't really call for that. My concern is, and I don't know if you can even speak to this, but how is it that these individuals, when they're charged in the court, right, with multiple offenses, that all of these offenses are run concurrently? I don't think that is doing justice, man. I don't think that, you know, I don't know if that is the magistrate's decision or whatever it is, but there ought to be a law, something, man. That people who have multiple charges, those, I feel it should be consecutively, you know. They shouldn't be all lumped together
Can I ask you a question? Think about this. Let me ask you this question. Let's suppose somebody is charged for a drug possession.
Right.
Then charged for firearm possession.
Right.
So they're charged for both these offenses, right?
Right.
And let's say they get off of one offense. They're found innocent of one offense. Right. Since they were all tied together, shouldn't they be? You think they should be charged? They should be found innocent of the other one too.
If they were found innocent of one, that automatically they should be found innocent.
Yeah.
No, the other one.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, just hear me out. Just hear me out for a minute. I'm trying to show you something.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, you just established that essentially you're being tried for two separate events at the same time. True or not true?
True.
Okay. So, if you get tried for two separate events and be found guilty for two separate events, and you are sentenced for two separate events, isn't it true that the one event for which you have been found guilty starts the day you were convicted and sentenced? The other one starts the day you were convicted and sentenced. So why shouldn't they run concurrently?
No, because they are two separate offenses.
Hold on.
There should be a penalty for one offense. There should be a penalty for another offense. For the possession of having, let's say, ammunition, it's 5 years. If for the possession of having marijuana, it's 5 years. If the possession of driving in a licensed car, whatever, it's 10 years. That should be 20 years, at least.
Hold on, you have all of these different charges, and you only get charged for one offense. Listen, please. Yeah, you're trying, but I need your passion. No. Let me tell you something. Remember now, what I try to do on this show, as passionate as both of us and all of us can get from time to time, is I want to educate people.
Right.
Your question is a legitimate question. Really legitimate. Lots of people have this question. Guess what I'm doing? I am going to have some legal people on with judicial experience to talk about this, because I'm not an expert.
All right.
But I don't think it's illogical, though, because you are, to me, you are answering your own question. You said to me, they are separate charges. That's what you said to me.
Right.
And you are, but yet, you are, but you are saying at the same time that I, having gotten convicted the same time of two separate events, I should serve one, then wait, and then serve the other. Which means I got 10 years for the one. Right?
No, which means that you broke the law in three different places, Mr. Lyon. You broke the law in three different places, you know? So you should get three different sentences.
To be clear, tell me how you want the sentences to go. Tell me, to be clear.
I want the sentences for each individual offense to be allocated to that offense. Okay?
Hold on, listen. Your words are correct. You said to be allocated to each offense. But that happens when you do concurrently, but you're talking about something different. What you're saying is you want them to run in a series. So you want serve
consecutively.
Consecutively, that's right. Right? You want them to send. I got you. I understand.
I understand. Mr. Lang, it is watering down the justice system, in my opinion. Okay.
I got you. You know what? Please save this question for when we have the judicial people on, yeah?
Oh, they'll do. Okay.
I appreciate it. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
Are you a business owner or HR professional? RF's team of pension specialists are here to empower your employees with market-leading retirement solutions and to make implementing group pensions easy and cost-effective. With RF, starting or switching your company pension plan is a breeze, and there are no setup fees. If you're looking for strong investment performance and low fees, visit rfgroup.com/empower and empower your team to retire comfortably with RF Group pensions today. That's rfgroup.com/empower.
You hear what boss man was saying in the back there just now?
About what? The luncheon?
Why are you always worried about food? No. About how we gotta pay a little more for national insurance.
Mildred, you talking fool. I can't afford to pay that.
And you're always crying, poor mouth. Ain't be much. Boss still gotta pay. 1st of July, 2024.
I think that terminal benefit is what did help my boy Tony through the pandemic. That same unemployment benefit. And guess what?
What?
Susan, I think she'd get a pregnancy benefit, eh?
You mean maternity benefit, eh? So now, we gotta do our part to make sure we get our pension. All right.
For more information, visit NIPRateIncrease.com.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. You know, there was an unfortunate incident in Grand Bahama. Remember, I was on air and things got cut off, and I told you that Grand Bahama Power Company that I had just been speaking about had an outage, and apparently that was caused by one of their employees being electrocuted. Fortunately, he has not passed away, but he did receive serious burns, and it's as last I heard, in stable condition in the hospital. And I think, if not already done, readying to be lifted to Florida for the treatment of the burns that he got. And we wish for him and his family all the very best and pray for his healing, complete and healing. I know of another gentleman with whom I went to school, actually, Kingsley, who was electrocuted. He was worked for the power company, and I remember talking to him after that and the visible physical impact that it had on him. But unfortunately, he died some weeks later. So we wish the very best for that worker, whose identity was not officially released, so I'm not calling anybody's name that way. By the way, according to Smith and Clark, a law firm in the U.S. and law.cornell.edu, sentences run concurrently when a defendant is to serve multiple sentences at the same time instead of one after another. Says judges impose concurrent sentences based on factors such as the nature of the crime, the history of the defendant, the testimony from witnesses or lawyers, and the state laws regarding maximum and minimum sentences. Judges often order concurrent sentences when the charges stem from a single event or incident and are lesser included charges. The defendant has no prior record, or the total punishment would be too long if consecutive. That was what I was trying to explain. However, ineloquently. We have some text here. Let me read. His text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Hope all is well. I'm writing in reference to our healthcare system as we embark on this new hospital. In your opinion, how serious do you think the government has considered the implementation of advanced practitioners such as physicians, assistants, and nurse practitioners? I fear this category of providers would be helpful in bridging the gap and disparities in primary care throughout the country. That's a very good question, extremely good question. I honestly don't know the answer to it. I know that we do not now have a place for physicians, assistants, and nurse practitioners in the country. And I've had a conversation with Dr. Dwayne Sands about this matter before. So I don't know. I don't know how seriously it's being considered at all. So I'm sorry, I don't. It's Texas. Hi, Z. Minister Cartwright Sands. Win is a nightmare. Won't happen. Okay. This text says, West End is historically a PLP stronghold, and OB was very much loved by the people there. Hubert Ingram could not pry that seat away from the PLP at that time if he ran. Stop the nonsense. I agree with you 100%. And that's like two different things. So can you compare the institutional F&M leaning seat of North Abaco lost under Minnis to the institutional PLP West Granbama and Bimini seat loss under Pinta? That's a very good question, actually. I think that's a very good question. And really, the answer is it was a bad loss, that North Abaco seat. But in fairness, and Dr. Minnis has to take the blame for this because he was the leader at the time. They elected a candidate that was ill-prepared for that. See, I always tell people, running in a by-election is not the same as running in the general election. In a by-election, you are isolated. The whole country and the whole political machinery descends upon that constituency. And so that candidate or those candidates are under the spotlight with immense intensity, and the resources being pulled to deal with the matter is significant, especially when the government is contesting the seat, right? So your candidate has to be not only on point, but really a compelling candidate, no matter who owns the seat, right? And so I think that the problem, a part of the problem there was candidate selection. Not that the candidate couldn't win, but the candidate certainly wasn't prepared to win. And I worked with that candidate late in the game, having been asked by Dr. Minnis to work with him. And I spent a couple of days well with the candidate. I think by all appearances, people suggest, believed that he improved. Because, you know, we tried to do what we could, but the odds were against him in terms of preparation. This text says he is serving 5 years on each. He is just the same prison for each, but happens to be one person. Absolutely. I tried to explain that, but it wasn't easy. So I assume the law must give room for consecutive sentencing based on sentencing guidelines, yes? Depending on the nature of the conviction, yeah? He could have been given 8 years on one, 10 on one, and 5 on another, and they all could have been served concurrently. He would still do only 10 years and not 23 years. So technically, he did 23 years on the separate charges. That's a fact. I mean, that's the truth, right? This is what I try and explain. He was charged for each incident. And at the time of his charge, he was sentenced for each incident. He's only one person, so he was paying the sentence for each separately, but at the same time. This is kind of like eating food, meat, rice, and sides, and drink, and dessert, and sink. Not the meat, then the rice, then the side, then the drink, then the dessert, etc. Or that's more like getting slapped, punched, and kicked the same time, instead of getting slap, punch, kick, one after the other, right? We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Afternoon, Z Live.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, man, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm doing well. Listen to me. Let me tell
you. Okay, that's great, man. That's great. Hey, Daniel, over the weekend, I'm dealing up the little parcel or crack the windshield. Oh, I just remember you say you have garage.
What's that? No, I have garage.
The hail over the weekend. Yeah, that ain't the end of the little parcel.
It ain't damage to the parcel, man. The hails weren't that heavy, but I went outside and picked some up off the ground and what have you, and you know, and took some photos and some video. But no, they weren't that big to do that kind of damage.
Oh, okay, because we had a little bit, too. We had a little bit, too, yesterday morning, too. But it wasn't the biggest, y'all know. It was a little light. And I have a double garage, so I ain't got to worry.
I'm like you. I'm big shot like you, man. My car don't sit in no garage. She sit right out there in the heat.
All right, boss. I hear you. I know what you have an on there in a parcel in the garage, yeah. But say what I call to say, I think the constituency allowance is helpful good with rent for the constituency office. A secretary to pay the phone bill, light, cable, put two, three computers in there.
Those are two different things. Those are two different things. No. There's a constituency office allowance.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Every member of parliament gets, I think it's $2,500 a month if it hasn't been increased. It may have been increased. When I was there, it was $2,500 a month you got. And that was to lease the building. So when I was in Marco City, the lease was about $800 a month.
Yeah.
And you have to pay someone to be in the office. And so she was making minimum wage. So she probably ended up like $1,100 a month. So now.
Yeah, because that's what that'll be good for. You need that, man. You got to give them, pay them, because the constituency needs to stay open, man. I have a little one or two computers inside and. Without a little thing, she could come on and get a little bag of grocery and little stuff like that. But what I really called you for, see, is you remember, but a couple of months ago, we had a candid conversation talking on a video with you to see for the shooting in Yalela. And we talking about how these fellas them got big guns on them and still being killed. I know if you saw the video for the being down one.
No.
Okay, well, then you had the commissioner and Ms. Kippins them saying the fella was killed with his gun on him. The same thing with me when you talk about it again. These young men, listen to us, man. Stop doing foolishness and walking around with your gun in your waist and believe you're all safe, man. You know, the fella even didn't get off a shot. The car pulled across him, he break off running straight down the middle of the road. He even didn't engage the fella with a gunfire. He break off running with his gun in his waist. Shoot him down in the road like a dub. Walk up over him and pump more shots in him. And he have his gun right in his waist. He even didn't get off one shot. He even didn't get his gun out of his waist. The young man will just stop believing you're toting on your gun. Because like you say, it's the element of surprise. Like you said in the last video. And you say, your WhatsApp is 4393043?
Yes.
I can send you it then. Yeah, I can send you it. 4393043. Yeah, man. Stop walking around with your gun and you always believe like you all killed someone and you know you all hard and you all invincible and no one could come get you all. Because when the fella's running up on you all break off running with your gun in your waist. So you know, sense you all up in that. What your sense you all walking around with gun for? And you all even ain't getting off a shot.
Well, the thing about it is it wasn't even my guidance and advice that I was talking about. I was saying what the Secret Service told us when we were being briefed by them as diplomatic officers.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. It's an element of surprise, man. Then, you know, you see the car pull across you. You see these three fellas come out. You didn't try and get you break off running straight up the middle. You didn't try to zigzag or cut you on yard. You get your leg shoot out. Then the fellas run you down and wash down above you and put my even out of 10 in you. But anyhow, yeah, see, when I come that way, the first thing I want to try is the jack in the crab box. That's the first thing I gave for on the menu. So, all right, man. Have a nice afternoon.
We got you. All right, brother. Take care.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let me read this text. It says, if Candia Dames was not such an outstanding journalist, we would have won that North Abaco by it. Is it Candia cost? You mean because she did that investigative journalism on the candidate and exposed to some of the challenges that he had. Yeah, I think, I mean, that did create a challenge for him. But, you know, again, that's what I'm saying. The selection of the candidate matters, because in a by-election, you are dealing with the kind of scrutiny you will never see in a general election. In a general election, they have to, people have to, journalists and them have to be paying attention to multiple constituencies, and typically they just, they zoom in on the ones they think are the most interesting, right? So good afternoon, trust all as well. Sharing content from the show. I don't know what that means, but okay. Don't forget, I have the Compliance Commission coming up. You know, if there's ever any uncertainty in life, and there is absolutely uncertainty, then there's risk. That's what uncertainty means. Uncertainty means risk. Risk means uncertainty, right? Because once you, if you have full knowledge, you can prepare as maximally as you can for something. So even while something might be a danger to you, it doesn't have the same element of risk involved because you don't have uncertainty. But wherever there's uncertainty, am I going to lose my home in the next 12 months to a storm? You don't know. Am I going to lose my home to a fire in the next 4 months? You don't know. Am I going to get in a car accident in the next 3 months? You don't know. We don't know a ton of things about a ton of things. And because of it, we have risk. And because of that uncertainty, people will insure against all kinds of things. I mean, it's amazing the kinds of things that people will insure against. Let me give you some interesting facts about insurance as an example, right? Because we're going to talk about to the Insurance Commission in the next hour. But I'm sure you how interesting insurance is. You remember the guy from Kiss, the band, the rock band that used to he used to long his tongue out a lot. You know that at one point he had his tongue insured for $1 million. Why? He wasn't sure he's gonna bite it off. Somebody was gonna bite it off. So I'm gonna give you some interesting facts about insurance by Brown and Joseph. Right? He said the Padres. This is the professional baseball team. Signed the same player for 23 years so he didn't lose his health insurance. Same player, signed for 23 years so he didn't lose his health insurance. Starbucks pays more for employee health insurance than it pays for coffee, according to Brown and Joseph. And no insurance company will ever underwrite a Jackie Chan production. Did you know that? By the way, do you know that insurance, the concept of insurance goes back as far as 4,000 years? 4,000 years. Like how? So what would happen was, remember when what the merchants, traders would do is, they would put some of their products in one ship, some in another ship, and some in another ship in case one of the ships sank, and they would have those products available. And see, in that way, they were taking out insurance. So insurance isn't just paying for something, it's the way you manage your risk. This lady, America Ferrera, I know you all know her, had her smile insured at one point for $10 million. A smile, okay? And an insurance policy exists for death by excessive laughter at a movie theater. Did you know that? That there's an insurance policy for that? If you die laughing too much in a movie theater. The very first insurance contract was written in 1347. 1340, that's over 1,000 years ago. Well, almost 1,000 years ago. An insurance company offered a cash reward to anyone who could capture the Loch Ness Monster. In 1971, whiskey manufacturer Cutty Sark offered an award of £1 million to anyone who could capture the Loch Ness Monster. Gene Simmons, y'all remember Gene Simmons, once insured his tongue, that's what they tell us, the one who I told you from Kiss, for $1 million. And then, you know, they insure body parts. That started in 1920. Do you know that there is an alien abduction insurance that's been available in America since 1987? Then that don't surprise me. What would surprise me if somebody took that insurance out? The word insurance originally meant engagement to marry. Engagement to marry was an insurance. Say, a hole-in-one insurance allows golfers to offer huge prizes to anyone who gets a hole-in-one, and so on and so forth. Anyway, but when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to engage the insurance commission and learn what they do in respect of all these insurances we take out in the country. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Are you a business owner or HR professional? RF's team of pension specialists are here to empower your employees with market-leading retirement solutions and to make implementing group pensions easy and cost-effective. With RF, starting or switching your company pension plan is a breeze, and there are no setup fees. If you're looking for strong investment performance and low fees, visit rfgroup.com/empower and empower your team to retire comfortably with RF Group Pensions today. That's rfgroup.com/empower.
Paper at Freeport Convenience Stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News Sales Representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there'll be no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want at some point to give us a call, you feel free to do so on 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. 16. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I am expecting some guests. I don't know that they are here yet. We do see someone in the...
Yes.
Yes, Ms. Claire?
No, it's Ms. Munnings Gray.
Oh, wonderful. You just used, yeah, it showed up for yeah. Somebody else. Yes, ma'am. We've got Mrs. Dana Munnings Gray, the superintendent of insurance, acting with us. Are you going to be joined too by...
No, it's just myself.
It's you. Okay, wonderful. Well, we're so glad to have you here with us. Thank you very much, ma'am, for taking up our offer to come and share what it is that the Insurance Commission does.
Yes.
Really appreciate it.
So, Mr. Lang, let me first say by apologizing for my inability on the previous occasion to be here, but it's never a time like this. And I just want to say thank you very much for the opportunity for allowing us to be on your show and just to kind of say who we are and what we're about.
No, we're grateful. We're grateful. We understand schedules sometimes don't work out quite the way we want, but that's fine. You're here now and we're grateful so we can help people understand, appreciate what it is that the Insurance Commission does. Now, first of all, let's tell us what the Insurance Commission is.
Okay, so we are a regulatory agency similar to any other regulatory agency. And when I say that, like Central Bank and Securities Commission and also the Compliance Commission, in the sense that we actually register and license, as well as monitor the licensees that we have, all insurance companies and insurance intermediaries in the Bahamas.
Okay, so it doesn't matter what kind of insurance you're doing, life, health, property, general, if you want to do that business in the Bahamas, you have to come and apply and be registered by the Insurance Commission.
That is correct.
Okay, all right, and then Once you are set up, you're monitored by the Insurance Commission. What is that monitoring about?
So let me go back and kind of just give a brief history, and not really history, but I just kind of explain exactly what the insurance industry looks like in the Bahamas.
Okay.
So we are unique in the sense that we are the only jurisdiction that has an intermediaries market. And when we speak about intermediaries, we're talking about a market for agents and brokers. And so we have insurance companies where persons are not able to go directly to an insurance company to purchase insurance. And so we're the only country in the world where we do not have direct selling, but what we do is have an intermediary market where you have to go through an agent or broker to be able to secure insurance. And that's whether it's health, life, or property and casualty, you have to go through an agent and broker.
Wow, the only country in the world.
Correct.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow,
so
okay.
So you're not allowed for direct selling in the Bahamas.
Wow, okay. So if I set up an insurance company, I can't go to John Blow Public and say, listen, I got insurance for you?
No, you can't. Unfortunately, you will have to go through an agent and broker.
Oh, okay. But I can hire my own agents? Is that the case?
So intermediaries itself actually have salespersons that are actually attached to their license. And so in the event that you were going to secure a car insurance, you would go to one of our licensees that is either an agent or a broker, and you would say to them, hey, listen, I'm looking for insurance, and this is the car and make and so forth. And so they will direct you to who it is that they write for, because they're able to write for up to about 3 to 5 other licensees, which will be the insurance companies itself.
Wow. Okay. That's a new one for me. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
No,
that helps you. That helps you to understand the industry quite easier.
Yes.
In ways, when you consider the interactions we have with insurance, I mean, generally speaking, it's through agents and brokers.
Correct. It is. And so a lot of times what we hear people say is that, oh, I have my insurance, my agent is XYZ or is Bahamas. And we said, no, that is your insurance company. Your agent and broker would be a company that is writing for and on behalf of that company.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much for that. Okay. So given that structure, we have these insurance companies, they don't direct sell. They go through agents and brokers. Given that, what is your monitoring all about? What is your regulating all about beyond the registering?
Okay, so when we look at our licensee population, we want to ensure from the aspect of insurance companies that they're able to pay claims. And so we're looking at liquidity issues as well. We're looking at whether or not the company is solvent, the company is able to be able to pay claims and honor such claims. We're looking at whether or not they meet our capital ratio calculation and solvency. And so that is what we look at from that aspect. In terms of due diligence, we want to know who's behind the company. So who's operating the company, whether or not they are fit and proper, whether or not they actually, in terms of our review, they've checked out to be of good character and someone that will not bring disrepute to the profession. And so that's from a monitoring standpoint. We look at those things, i.e. the financial strength of the company, but not just that, due diligence, compliance, and also ensuring that they're renewing on a timely basis.
And one of the things that's unique about regulators is that regulators don't just go out there and do things at their discretion. Regulators do things in accordance with the law.
Exactly.
That authority, right? What law empowers the commission?
Okay, so currently we have two pieces of legislation of which we administer. One would be our domestic insurance act, which is for our domestic companies. And so it would be all of the licensees that operate from within the Bahamas. And then you have the external act. So that would be looking at our insurance companies, such as captives, that are external to the Bahamas. They're licensed in the Bahamas, but really their population and their stakeholders is outside of the Bahamas.
Okay. And so it's the Insurance Act. So basically, for people to understand your powers, understand what the rules are for these insurance companies, these agents and brokers, they should be familiar with the insurance. All right. Okay. And
however,
however, we
recognize though that, I mean, obviously we have persons that do not appreciate the level of legalese that you may have in a piece of legislation. So. Mm-hmm. Over the last few weeks, and particularly from February to now, what we have done is ensure that we have amplified our presence on social media. So one of our mandates as a regulator is also to ensure consumer awareness. While we have licensees that we are geared towards ensuring that they're in the market, our real stakeholder is the public. And so that is our mandate to ensure that we are ensuring that they are properly insured, but then also that the insurance companies is doing what needs to be done to ensure that they're protected. And so what we have been doing is ensuring that our social media pages are amplified, our consumer awareness ads and projects are out there. So we have definitely been all about educating the public lately.
Now, what I want to ask you this, because the last time we had the Insurance Commission on, I think many people appreciated this piece of information from them.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have people who are registered with you, but you are not recommending anybody for insurance, right? These are just people who have met the requirements of the law for registration.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Plus, we just blame people. We just blame you always. You know.
Exactly. And so our job is not to say to people that, hey, you should go to this company versus the other, or we find that in the course of doing business that this insurance company may be a bit above board or this one may take longer than others. That's not what we're about. What we're about is ensuring that anybody that enters the industry is one properly regularized, the two, that they are properly registered with the commission, that we are monitoring their activity. We're monitoring even the communication, the level of complaints that may come into the commission or to our licensees to ensure that they're being answered in a timely fashion. So we're monitoring the interaction to ensure, like I said, that our stakeholders, particularly the insuring public, is safeguarded.
Now that's interesting. A person, and this is the operative word, reasonably come to the commission to complain about?
Okay, so in terms of complaints, what we would see is we had a situation where we had a complainant that stated that, listen, my policy has lapsed, I'm trying to reinstate the policy. And so really what happened was they did not adhere to the deadlines in which the policy ought to have been paid. The policy went into a period of where it was lapsed. And at the time that they went to actually reinstate it, they realized that they were considered uninsurable, right? And so they wanted the commission to intervene. In cases like that, we're unable to intervene because it's a contractual obligation between that individual and the insurance company. What we would say from a consumer awareness is ensure that you know your policy. Ensure that you know the date that premiums are due, that you are adhering to those dates. Because unfortunately, if it's a case where your policy is lapsed because you failed to pay, then while we may have that level of relationship with the insurance company to say, hey, listen, this is a one-off. Is there a procedure or policy where you can reinstate them? If you're talking about somebody who's gone from a state of being an insurable individual to somebody who's uninsurable, that's where they may have the level of difficulty.
Now I believe you might be familiar with this, but during many of these hurricanes, when I heard the most people talking about the commission and complaining was when they talked about the insurance company told them they were underinsured.
Correct. Condition on average.
Right. So, but that's not, I mean, again, is that something that the insurance commission could address, or is that another?
So I'm happy that you asked that question, because that's also one of the ads that we have out there, condition on average. And so what typically happens is, let's say in the event that someone actually purchased a home and their house is valued at $400,000, when they go out to seek insurance for that house, as opposed to, let's say, insuring the house for the $400,000 or $450,000 or whatever it's worth, they're looking at the financial, the pay, what they have to pay for that premium, right? And so they're saying, okay, I can't afford that amount, so I'm only going to insure it for $200,000. So if anything goes wrong, then I'm covered up to $200,000. The reality is, though, you're not getting, in the event that something happened and it's catastrophic, right? You're not going to get the full value of what the house is valued because of the fact that you've underinsured your house. So it's almost as if you're driving, let's say, a 2024 Mercedes-Benz valued at $100,000, you decide that you only want to insure for $40,000, God forbid you get into an accident, then you're only going to pay up to the $40,000. You would have underinsure on a vehicle that would have been worth so much more. And that's what we're seeing as well.
So in addition to your out-of-pocket deductible, you're also going to not get the value of the $60,000 you didn't insure.
Exactly. And so that is what the awareness is about. Saying to people, one, ensure that you have a proper assessment of your assets. Your home is your biggest asset, right? And so you want to ensure for that in particular, that is properly insured and adequately insured.
And the reason why I raise it is to know that if you underinsure and find yourself in a catastrophe and need now to go replace your home, and you don't have the full value replacement, you can't come to the commission to get relief, because it's on you to be able to read your contract and know that, and to assess the value of your home to know that you are adequately insured. Is that true or not true?
Very much so true. And the one thing that I want to also say, though, Mr. Lang, is, and I think it's important that we say this, over the last few months, and I think a lot of people, while they hear about blacklisting, they don't appreciate the ramification it has on our financial service industry, particularly that of the insurance industry. And so when we went through the last blacklisting exercise, what we saw is, and so let me kind of take it a step back. When you insure with an insurance company here, some of the risk they absorb and some of the risk they actually cede to another insurance company. And so that's what we call reinsurance. So let's just say in the event you have a vehicle for $100,000, I'm only able to take on 50% of your risk. So I will insure for $50,000, but the other $50,000, I am now going to cede to another insurance company. Most of our insurance companies are outside of the Bahamas, which means that we go to a different jurisdiction, we go to different countries in order to be able to get that level of reinsurance. When we were blacklisted, what we saw, though, was the position of some of those countries stating that, unfortunately, if there is a claim, we will not be able to pay that claim to you because your country name appears on the blacklist. And so we had that happening. When we were removed from the list, then we started to see some level of relief. And so what we are saying to people is two things. One, blacklists do affect the insurance industry. And two, we say to them, if you have insurance, particularly property insurance, we ask them to retain it. Because during the last few months, we also experienced what we call a hard market, meant if you had insurance and you did not keep it, sometimes it was very difficult to get it back because of the capacity issues we were having.
And sometimes if you did get it back, you were paying a huge premium.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we say to people, if you have it, please keep it. We know that it's expensive, it's a necessary evil, but if you have it, the unfortunate thing is if there's a capacity issue, companies will have to turn you around and say to you that they cannot cover you for CAT. I mean, for when you look at CAT coverage, meaning hurricane or damage relating to any storm or hurricane.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is, as long as there's risk in the world, and yes, some significant risk in the world, you really ought to take insurance very seriously now. Granted, it becomes a little bit of a squeeze when it's time to pay it out and et cetera. But I can tell you one thing. When that incident hits,
listen,
the last thing you want to be is without that insurance. Ask a man who went through Dorian, had his house flooded. Ask a man who had prostate cancer and had to go to the hospital, so forth.
So, Mr. Lang, can I stop you there? Let me take it back. I say to people, I say to people all the time, when you talk about a passion for insurance, the Insurance Commission is that. We recognize the importance of insurance, but particularly for myself, and I'm not afraid to speak the story, and I say it all the time to encourage people that insurance is very important. In 2021, I remember being on a mission for the government, working for the Bahamas government in another country, assessing their financial system. And I went into that country walking, no sign of an ailment, an illness, nothing. Perfectly normal, having just had my checkup, feeling fine. Went into that country, came out 2 weeks later in a wheelchair. Within 1 week, diagnosed as a rare form of type 1 diabetes, insulin dependent. And so when I look at what my monthly expenditure is to stay alive, without insurance, I would be paying $3,000 to $4,000 a month to stay alive. With my insurance, thank God I do have two of them, I pay $0 a month. And so I cannot say enough to the public how important insurance is. We don't appreciate insurance until we actually have to depend on it. And I'm a person that lives 30 plus years without having being ill to now being insulin dependent with three types of insulin a day and never realizing how important insurance was.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely, absolutely. And again, we know, we're not naive. There are folk who insurance just is out of the budget. It can't be done. But we're just saying to those who can, it really matters. And maybe that's where the discussion for national health insurance becomes ever so important in terms of the development of the national insurance system, the national health insurance system, kind of stuff. Yeah.
You know, and we do recognize that we have a high demographic of individuals that have illnesses that make them uninsurable. The commission is taking a look at that, looking at other jurisdictions, benchmarking legislation to ensure that we're not discriminatory in our approach. We're at the stage now where we're looking to amalgamate the two pieces of legislation that we administer, but we're also now developing the level of relationship and rapport with our industry stakeholders, particularly our licensees, so that they're part of the conversation.
Now, I could tell you ain't one of them Nassau-centric people, but you know,
I think
about life only in terms of Nassau and Freeport.
So let me say this right now, because I got to plug this. I am going to plug this because you said it. So we are not Nassau-centric. We're Nassau-centric now because that's where we're located. But last month, we would have taken the opportunity to commence our courtesy calls of all of our licensees to include those in Grand Bahama. So last month, we would have touched at least about 15 of our licensees there. We recognize that the approach of regulatory has always been Nassau-centric. So we do intend over the next few months, the early next year, to be able to establish a presence in Grand Bahama and looking at other islands to ensure that we're carrying out our mandate.
But do any of the other islands have insurance offices in them outside of Grand Bahama?
Maybe we have insurance companies and agents in the Berry Islands, in Exuma, in Eleuthera, we have in Grand Bahama. So yes, we do have insurance companies and agents and intermediaries throughout the archipelago of the Bahamas.
Okay, and in terms of staff complement, like how many people are in the commission doing all of this work, and how are you organized around that? You could think about that and answer it when we come back from this break. Is that okay?
That is fine, but I could answer that quick. We have 38 staff members at the commission right now, and we are expanding because we do recognize that we have a mandate that we would like to carry out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking with the Superintendent of Insurance, acting in the Insurance Commission, Dana Munnings Gray. And when we come back, we will continue learning all we could learn about the Insurance Commission today. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z-Live.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Hear what Boss Man was saying in the back there just now.
About what? The luncheon?
Why are you always worried about food? No. About how we gotta pay a little more for national insurance.
Mildred, you talking fool. I can't afford to pay that.
And you're always crying palm out. Ain't gonna be much. Boss still gotta pay. 1st of July, 2024.
I think that criminal benefit is what did help my boy Tony through the pandemic. That same unemployment benefit. And guess what?
What?
Susan, I think she'd get a pregnancy benefit, eh?
You mean maternity benefit, eh? So now, we gotta do our part to make sure we get our pension. All right.
For more information, visit NIBRateIncrease.com.
I marched the car. The lady who ran into me marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Living with a neurological condition shouldn't define you. At Cleveland Clinic in Florida, we do whatever it takes to make life better today while discovering new treatments for a brighter tomorrow. From epilepsy management to specialized spine care and brain tumor surgery, we're delivering world-class neurology care for the day-to-day, for the days you live for every care in the world. Visit clevelandclinicflorida.org/Caribbean.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same
road. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Langyo. Host, so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We are here with Mrs. Dana Munnings Gray, Superintendent of Insurance. We're talking about the Insurance Commission and its work. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. From the Family Islands, you can call us on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We have a question here for you, ma'am. It says, if I have a group of homes that I finance and I want to self-insure them, do I have to register under the law?
So in terms of self-insurance, obviously you don't, because you've now absorbed the risk yourself. So you're saying, right. I don't want to insure with a company. I'm going to absorb that risk. So no, you don't have to come to the commission. However, there's another way in which persons can realize self-insurance, and that's through captive insurance. And so in the event that they decided that I have a group of companies, I have a commercial business, and I want to self-insure in the sense that I want to absorb some of my risk, then essentially what they can do is to incorporate or establish what we would call a captive, which means it's a mechanism. It's a what we call a risk transferring mechanism that allows you to transfer the risk from yourself to a company. But because you form part of the shareholders of that captive, you're still retaining the risk. Right. And we're more than happy, and we're more than happy with that person asking the question, to have a conversation with them and walk them through the difference between self-insurance by way of, hey, I'm just going to absorb the risk, versus I am going to establish a captive so that I can actually transfer the risk to a vehicle that would allow for it.
Because largely regulators are trying to avoid systemic risk, you know, things that can spread to the broader public because you've taken on a contract with the public, you've taken money from the public, you are promising services and products to the public, and anything that affects one, two, and then spreads to the rest becomes a challenge for that industry and probably an even greater challenge for the whole economy and society.
Correct. Correct. And so, again, like I said, we're more than happy where that person may want to explore, being able to absorb the risk themselves or self-insurance, we are more than happy to explore what that may look like.
This text says, great show as usual, Mr. Lang. I ain't paying no house insurance last year. Yeah, before I literally pray no hurricane came. Mr. Lang, I praying this year, but I insure on my house. My house look off the chain, and if I don't insure my house,
yeah,
get destroyed, I would have to live by my mommy and go by Mr. Lang house, and I like my AC turned.
Yes. And I mean, so that person, they definitely need to insure then.
yeah, they say now, so Mr. Lang won't be on my run. My point is, where could I go to insure for my good looking house? Which we have many, many options, eh?
Yes, and so on our website, and again, we will obviously guide the public to our website and also social media pages, LinkedIn and Facebook. But on our website, it has a list of licensees. So you have your agents and brokers that you will obviously attend to be able to find a quote. They'll be able to provide you a quote, giving you obviously the value of what the house is and what that contract would look like. And then you would also have a listing of what we would call our insurance company or insurers on our website as well.
This text says, also get life insurance, because if the person died, then the family don't have to cry because the large funeral bill and have to end up in spoken.
Now let me say this though, Mr. Lang, and I have to say this to the public. It's one thing to be able to get life or medical insurance. It's the next thing to ensure that you are properly and adequately disclosing. Okay. See, I don't know what it is, but I always remember back in the days when I had first started, and I wanted to disclose a little thing on my form, and there was someone next to me said, you don't put them things on the form, right? Let me say this. We have a thing of where when we are filling out application form, particularly for insurance, and they ask, have you been ill or have you been sick or have you had surgery? Or whatever, people like to put no. But when you actually drill down, you may see, and they'll ask, have you been hospitalized in the last 5 to 10 years? And people will put no. For females in particular, I want you to look at that question, because when you're now disclosing that you have a child just 2 years old, but you've never been hospitalized, that doesn't look right. On top of that, when you're filling the application, we cannot say to you enough, ensure that you're being honest. There's full and frank disclosure. The absence of full and frank disclosure will and could possibly lead to your insurance company not honoring your claim. Because if you're found to be dishonest or to have misrepresented on that application, that is good grounds for your claim to be denied. Please, if you have any illnesses, state it. The most thing they can do is two things. One, rate you, or two, tell you that they cannot provide you. But what you would hate to know is that you pay on an insurance, you fail to disclose, God forbid that you passed away, and now your beneficiaries are unable to be able to claim your death benefit because you failed to give full and frank disclosure. We see it oftentimes. Please ensure that when you're completing those forms, that you are doing it honestly.
You know, it's very interesting you say that. I went into a physical examination for an insurance application. And at the time, my prostate-specific antigen was only elevated. I hadn't been diagnosed with prostate cancer or anything like that, but it was elevated. And I went in and I was doing the examination with the doctor, et cetera. And he asked me a question on the form that the insurance company sends, right? And so I said, well, the only thing is that I've had elevated PSA and so forth and so forth. And so we talked about that for a while. And do you know that I got denied the insurance? Well, you know, not denied it, but they flag it or whatever that is that they do. But they said, that the doctor said, disclosed.
Yeah.
But I had to do so because I'm thinking, okay, well, if I don't say this and something happens.
And something happens.
You know?
Exactly. You know, and that's the unfortunate thing. You've had people that have paid on insurance for many years, right? And on the form it asks, do you have diabetes? They put no. Have you ever had cancer? They put no, right? And then the unfortunate thing is when they pass away, your medical records are there, regardless of how you think, hey, you've been to a little clinic here and nobody knows that you've been to that clinic, your medical records live on. And so with that, there is going to be full and frank disclosure after you would have failed to disclose, and you are now running the risk of your beneficiaries not being able to benefit from that death claim. And so what we will say to you is full disclosure.
This text says, what is the point of asking if you are affiliated with a politician? Because what does that have to do with insurance?
So I think, Mr. Lang, I think we can appreciate that as a bigger and broader question. It has nothing to do with insurance companies asking you if you're affiliated. It has to do with the financial service ecosystem that we live in. You are required to state whether or not you are a politically exposed person, right? And it just means then that the financial institution will employ what we call enhanced due diligence. So as opposed to asking you for just a copy of your passport, we may ask you, what is your source of wealth or your source of funds, right? It's just an enhancement of our due diligence process.
I agree with you 100% and I understand it, but I totally understand that person's perspective to obviously being a politically exposed person myself. Because honestly, if I go into you for a contract for life insurance, what's the relationship me and you gonna have?
Correct.
If I die, you are going to pay me on the basis that I've been paying you for a premium.
Correct.
What in the world could me being a politically exposed person be relevant to that and due diligence extra? You need to know whether I'm healthy, a good insurable risk, and all that kind of.
I get you, but I, as a compliance professional, I differ from your point of view. And let me just
tell you, no, help me understand it.
Let me say this. So we are looking at it from a life perspective. Let's look at it from an annuity perspective, right?
Okay.
So let's
okay.
say that you have an annuity account, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say that you are, for lack of a classification, considered a pet.
Yes.
Okay. The purpose of the classification is so that the financial institution could ensure that they carry out the necessary due diligence. On an account that's based on an annuitant account, you're making deposits on a constant basis to be able to grow your investment portfolio, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So with that being said, your affiliation, either one as being a PEP or relative or close to a PEP, can very mean then that politically exposed person can very well say, hey, Shivago, I know you have that annuity. I have $10,000 that I just got in the sale of a drug trafficking ring that I need you to put on your annuity. And in 1 month, I need you to withdraw that and get me a check. What you have essentially done then is facilitate money laundering by that individual.
I fully understand and appreciate that. But here's what I'm thinking, because you're right. See, you switch from a life insurance to an annuity because the risk associated there is greater in respect of money laundering and the like. So I'm thinking on a risk-based thing, you shouldn't just, I shouldn't be treated as a PEP in every circumstance.
Well, you're not.
Make the circumstance fit the need for PEP due diligence. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I can imagine what is happening is everybody is being asked if you're a PEP because you cannot assume that you're not, right? So I just And so what is happening is that insurance company or that intermediary is carrying out the necessary due diligence, meaning they are asking, are you a PEP? And so it's clear declaration is either yes or no. If you are, then it means that the company will employ enhanced due diligence. If you're not, it means that it will be simplified due diligence. And so that's all that is. I know it's frustrating from the layman who doesn't appreciate it, but that's our job to be able to explain it.
Well, here's the thing, though, as they explained to me, and that ain't the law. This is sometimes discretion being exercised by people who are afraid that somebody might just drop in and swoop in and say, you know what, y'all didn't do y'all due diligence. It's really what it is. And a lot of these things are not being done in other jurisdictions who actually put this pressure on us to do.
And I get you. We're always caught up in the do as we say and not what we do, right? Yeah. But the reality is when you look at it, it is a part of the law, is a part of the FTRA. There's a requirement to carry out due diligence, right? And every regulatory agency.
The due diligence, yes, I agree.
100%. Due diligence, which is also the PEP declaration forms a part of that as well. And so that falls a part of that as well. So when you look at those declarations and those questions, it is literally the financial institution carrying out its obligation under the Financial Transaction Reporting Act and under possibly their own legislative framework.
We can argue about this until next year.
Yeah, well, I'm here for it.
I would see it to you because, you know, this is your business. So I agree. It's sometimes I think just a personal frustration that lots of people have who have to deal with it for sure.
No, and I appreciate that, Mr. Lang, because at times I get frustrated as well. And then I have to remind myself, you know, this is what is required.
Yes. Understood. Now, when we come, I need you to speak to this, please. Like, what are some of the that insurance companies could make that would require, you know, y'all to say, okay, bro, sister, y'all messed up here, et cetera, and what might be some of the penalties and so forth and so forth. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We take our final break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with the superintendent of the insurance commission. We'll be back.
We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Looking for a breakfast that will wake up your taste buds and kickstart your day? Well, Burger King NASA has got you covered with the new Angry Crust Sandwich. Made with fluffy eggs, melted cheese, jalapenos, a spicy sauce, and your choice of ham, sausage, or bacon on a warm croissant. Make it a combo and add our signature hash browns and your choice of coffee, tea, or orange juice for a great way to start your day. Spice up your breakfast with the new Angry Crust Sandwich combo only at Burger King NASA.
Are you a business owner or HR professional? RF's team of pension specialists are here to empower your employees with market-leading retirement solutions and to make implementing group pensions easy and cost-effective. With RF, starting or switching your company pension plan is a breeze, and there are no setup fees. If you're looking for strong investment performance and low fees, visit rfgroup.com/empower and empower your team to retire comfortably with RF Group Pensions today. That's rfgroup.com/empower.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavandre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody, come take my hand.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today with Acting Superintendent of the Insurance Commission, Mrs. Dana Munnings Gray, and we're talking about the work of the Insurance Commission. And I, might I ask, did you ever teach?
No, I have never.
Oh, you have a very like easy way of helping people understand information, almost like a teacher. So thank you very much for being on today.
Thank you very much for having us. We're happy to be here.
So insurance companies might.
Hello?
Or agents and brokers, kind of breaches might. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, so
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, unfortunately, you were breaking up.
Hello.
A bit. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you well. Thank you. And I hope you can hear me well too.
Yeah, I can hear you much better now.
Okay.
So obviously, within our legislation, there are regulatory obligations of our licensees in terms of submission of documents, i.e. submission of financial statements 120 days after the year end. And so that can be one of the breaches. So in the event that you're not adhering to your regulatory obligation, i.e. the filing of documents and when they're due, you can be penalized because it is an offense under our legislation. That penalty can range anywhere from $3,500 to $10,000. If you're operating without a license in the Bahamas, that penalty is up to $50,000. And so there are instances in which persons can be breached or found to be offending our legislation, and the commission does actually take the legal action against those individuals. And so our legislation dictates what is classified as an offense from our licensees, and failure to adhere to them does warrant penalties.
A foreign insurance company could not sell insurance in the Bahamas market without being registered with the Insurance Commission, right?
Correct. Or being affiliated, and when I say affiliated, working through a company that is registered in the Bahamas.
Okay, now one of the, I know a long time ago I was asked this question. There's some issue about, so for instance, can a Bahamian purchase insurance somewhere else in the world?
Yes, and I know where you're going with this. So this seems to be our section 33 or 141. So what happens in effect is, in the event that a Bahamian is unable to secure coverage in the Bahamas, but they're able to secure it, and this is according to our legislation, they're able to secure it elsewhere, they can come to the commission and ask for approval to secure it through another insurance company outside of the Bahamas. And I know there are oftentimes that Bahamians do it otherwise without seeking the approval of the commission. However, in the legislation, there is a requirement for persons that are placing insurance outside of the Bahamas to seek the approval, so that the commission is also then exploring the avenue with that individual to say, in the event that something happens untoward, the commission is not held accountable.
That's interesting, because that's similar to the central bank, where, you know, people used to say, oh, you can't get a loan, say, for instance, from a foreign institution. And that's not the whole story. The whole story was, if you could demonstrate to the central bank that every place you have tried here that's regulated by the central bank, you could not get such a thing.
Coverage.
You could get it elsewhere. They may consider it.
Yes. And yeah. I cannot recall where there's been an instance where we have denied. The two conditions that we will approve is, one, if you're unable to secure insurance in the Bahamas locally. So let's say you have a condition that unfortunately our insurers here will not cover the risk for, right? So let's say in my instance, I have type 1 diabetes. In the event that we find that insurance companies do not cover it here, if I'm able to find insurance outside of the Bahamas that will provide coverage for me, then I'm able to write to the commission and say, hey, I found this coverage and I want to place insurance outside of the Bahamas. The second condition is, in the event that you found coverage, but the coverage is so expensive that it makes it unaffordable, then you can obviously write to the commission and say, hey, I found insurance to cover me. However, what I've been quoted is $10,000 per year, and I'm finding insurance someplace else for $7,000 a year. The commission within 24 hours would normally acknowledge receipt of your request and be able to provide either a letter of approval or conditions of why we may not approve that, approve you placing it outside of the Bahamas.
It sounds like I might be coming the odd soon because I have to apply for some insurance.
Yes.
And so we see. But insurance fraud, like what might that look like? We hear that a lot. You hear it a lot on TV when you're watching TV or something, some sitcom or something like that. What is insurance fraud? What might that look like?
So let's just take a simple example of what insurance fraud can possibly be. So let's say in the event that someone purchased a vehicle, they recognize that the vehicle itself is valuable. They go and insure it with an insurance company. And let's say a month later, they decide that, hey, listen, this worth more to me, either being off the streets than it being on the streets. So they can very well decide that, hey, I am going to pay someone to actually have the car crashed, or I'm going to pretend as if it was stolen, whatever it may be. That is what will be considered as insurance fraud. Okay. And that's an example of insurance. There are so many different examples of what insurance fraud look like, but that is one of the very basic ones.
Can you take out a life insurance on someone without their knowledge?
You have to have an insurable interest. And so it could be without their knowledge if you have an insurable interest. So let's say I have a child and I don't have to necessarily tell her that I have an insurance on her, but because it's my child, I have an interest to insure her. And so, yes, okay. I can take that out. So let's say I have a mother or aunt. Yes, I may be able to take it out. They may have to sign the form. And so they may know that I'm taking out something on them. But if it is a minor, then they not necessarily have to know that I have something out on them. But in order for me to be able to take out that insurance, it has to be an insurable interest between me and the company that I'm insuring.
That's the concept, insurable interest.
Correct.
And agents, I once heard an agent say, well, you know, your thing was lapsing, and so I had to make the payment or something like that and so forth. But then they were saying, you know, you're not really supposed to do that.
So here, what now? The fact that you said agent, I gotta stop you right there. We have, so I know back in the days, you used to say your policy woman and your policy man. Unfortunately, according to our legislation, those individuals are named salespersons. An agent is a corporate entity.
And
is a broker. So you hear people say, that's my sales agent. There is no such thing in legislation. It's called a salesperson, and agent is corporate.
Okay. So the agent could only be a corporate entity.
Correct. And okay. So in cases where you have a salesperson that would come to you to collect your premium, let's say in the event that you don't have your premium, but they're now offering to pay it, that is against the law. They should not be doing that.
Okay.
If they're filling out that application for you, they should not be doing that, okay? If they're coming to you and your premium is $80 and you have $50 and they're saying to you, let me collect the 50 and I'll get back the 30 from you, or I'll put the 30. They should not be doing that.
Well, the one good thing in the Bahamas is ain't too many of them want to do that for you, no else.
Maybe the application part, but yes.
Yeah. they want to collect that money so forth. Anything else? We got 2 minutes. Anything else that you need us to be aware of in respect of the commission and insurance generally in the country?
So two things. One, we're currently, like I've stated, in the process of amalgamating our legislation. We're taking this opportunity to partner with our insurance stakeholders, i.e. insurance companies, intermediaries, but also the insuring public, to ensure that the legislation that we actually introduced to the Bahamas now is something that's progressive, innovative, but there's always forward thinking, okay? And so we're taking that opportunity now to look at what we want our legislation to look like in the next 10 to 15 years, right? So that's one thing. If you have an interest in the insurance industry in the Bahamas, if there is something that you see, that you've encountered, that you feel that the commission needs to be aware of it, please feel free, reach out to us. We are accessible, and we are also waiting to have that conversation with you. The second thing is, In order to know what's happening in the insurance industry, what we would say is follow us on social media. We're big on LinkedIn. We're big on Facebook. Please follow us. We have campaigns that are running. We've also now started to introduce our campaigns in Creole, and we'll also introduce it in Spanish because we recognize that there's a big demographic of individuals that we're not touching. And so you can see our ads on our website, which is www.icb.gov.bs, or you can find us on Facebook or LinkedIn. And thank you very much for having us.
We are very grateful. We're very grateful to you, Madam Superintendent. Thank you so very much. And anytime you feel the need to get information out, you give us a shout. We're happy to do it.
Thank you very much for having us.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. God bless you. Have a great evening. He spares our lives. We'll be back with you tomorrow. And guess what? We're going to be here with Mr. Michael Pintard, leader of the opposition, tomorrow. Take care.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.